O-M goodness.
They really did hire a bunny.
What?
I gotta tell you, you are even cuter than I thought you'd be.
Ooh, you probably didn't know, but a bunny can call another bunny cute, but when other animals do it, it's a little...
I am so sorry.
Welcome to the 250 for the third time. It's gonna happen. Welcome to the 250. I'm Danielle.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Erica, and I always go third.
Yeah. So we're all in different places. This is like the third time we've tried to record this thing, but it's fine. It's going to work this time. And it'll be.
Yeah, we're using Skype, which is tough.
Yeah.
Because
it's weird because we see each other's faces, but when you hear it, it'll sound like we're all in the same room.
Wow.
Yeah.
That didn't make sense because those
with
two
occasional
things
interruptions by weird, distorted ghost sounds.
Or like the sound
of the magic of taking a microphone. Yeah. Anyway.
This makes for great podcasting.
Yes, this is
we're
wonderful.
Making audio jokes. We're making, oh man, what a quality organization.
It so what movie did we watch?
We watched Zootopia this week, and it was great. It was great.
It was phenomenal.
I have said it before on our first iteration of this, and I will say it again. This is one of my favorite movies I've ever seen. I loved it. It was so good.
Oh, it was great. It was a great movie. So, plot synopsis. Basically, Zootopia is about this utopian society called Zootopia. It's a city where all animals, who are all the characters, live in social harmony. And the main character, Judy Hopps, is a bunny from, like, the Midwest who wants to be a police officer. But she's, like, a bunny, and that's, like, not a thing that has ever happened. But she, like, follows her dreams and becomes this police officer in Zootopia, which is, like, a huge deal. But she ends up getting assigned to be a meter maid and, like, is on parking duty because she's being discriminated against because she's a bunny, obviously. So, and then throughout the movie, she meets characters. Jason Bateman plays a fox who's, like, a sly fox. And basically, like, everyone hates foxes in this movie. Like, they're, like, very heavily discriminated against.
Heavily.
Yeah. So... She meets the fox, and then she gets assigned to this case where all of these predator mammals are going missing. And at first she really wants to be on the case, but then her sergeant's like, no, you're a bunny, you can't do that, because bunnies can't, you know, be real cops. So she ends up actually getting assigned to find this otter, and we find out that there's this whole conspiracy where all the predators are being turned into, like, savage, back to the old days where they used to, like, hunt prey. And it's this whole, like, social commentary on discrimination and, like, racial tension. It's great. It was a good
one. It was just, like, so deep. And you could totally watch it as a 7-year-old and be like, I love bunnies.
Fun.
Bunnies are great. I'm sad that this bunny didn't get what the bunny wanted. And then you watch it like we did and we're like, oh, I get it. I get mm-hmm. it. Am I being racist? Am I being something-ist? And it's just crazy. It was so cool to watch. It was also very meta because, like, I would do this thing where I would see an animal and it would be portrayed a certain way. Like there's a mob boss in this and he's like a little mole. And
he has
this whole, like, rat daughter who, like, kind of looks like Snooki.
It's so cute. Her accent killed me.
They're from New Jersey. Or like, oh, they're Italian. And I was like, oh no, am I being... of some sort.
Yeah, I love how the mob boss's name was Mr. Big, and like the big reveal is that so the visual gags in this movie are incredible.
Great.
This is like one of the things that makes it. I think like that's like one of my favorite scenes is when you're about to meet like a mob boss whose name is Mr. Big, and the lead up to the scene is the two main characters being taken away by polar bears, and they enter into this room that's like very, very, it's very dark and there's a bunch of polar bears in the back. And one polar bear walks into the room and the main character goes, is that Mr. Big? And the fox who like knows what Mr. Big looks like is like, no, he's way scarier. And then a bigger polar bear walks in the room and she's like, is that Mr. Big? And she's like, no, he's more scarier. And then the polar bear that's like too big to fit into the room who has to like crawl to get in and she goes like, oh my God, is that Mr. Big? And the polar bear walks up to this desk, sits down in the chair, and then like turns around a smaller chair on the table.
Tiny chair.
Tiny chair. And then this rat just looks at you and he's like, eh.
You come to me on the day of my...
Do, and it's like this tiny mole person whose name is Mr.
Wonderful
Big.
Impression, Danielle.
Oh my God. It was thank you. Just, I was watching this, like, so Danielle and Erica watched it by themselves, or together in DC, and I'm in Kentucky. And so I was watching it by myself, and it literally, I was like in a public place, and I had to like, it was so hard for me to contain my laughter. Like, it was like, oh my God, that is amazing. The buildup to that was incredible. And there was so, like, I think the visuals are one of the things that this movie did best.
Yeah, to add on to that, I think that this is a wonderful example of great animation where it's not caught up in the gimmicks of the actual, like, form of, like, animating things and being like, wow, look at how realistic that yak hair is. It's like, no, what makes this movie so great is that the animation is so nicely interwoven with the actual story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I said this on an earlier iteration of our podcast, but what I really liked is how they had all of the sizes of the buildings were all uniform. So it's like probably bigger than human sized, I'd say, right? Just like kind of a big city. And so you have like a mouse going through a massive door that an elephant can barely fit through. And that actually has a lot of room for other visual gags, too. There is a scene in which Nick, the main fox, is doing this kind of like scheme where he takes these big popsicles made by elephants. So they're like literally physically massive. And he gives them to rats by like repurposing the popsicle into little tiny popsicles.
And refreezes them.
Yeah, like it's basically like he has like an ice cube tray for new popsicles, and then he like sells the popsicle sticks to like even smaller animals as like
lemmings. And they like follow each other out of the bank. It was great.
Yeah.
And
it was so funny. It was just like such a good use of like something like size in animation that you really don't always think about because you don't always have to, but in a way that was just so brilliant and also was able to show, I think, the brilliance of one of the main characters.
Yeah. Oh, and it's really interesting too. Like the way this is a movie that like obviously could only work as an animated movie. Like you'd never be able to do this live action.
It'd be like Doctor Doolittle.
But like this, yeah, it'd be terrifying if it was live action.
It'd
like,
be just weird.
Right. But the way they created the city that they like is Zootopia and this society was like really interesting and awesome to me. Like, because there were visual gags everywhere. Like from the moment where she like walks in to the train station in Zootopia and there's like hippos like getting air blown like on the outside. There's a juice bar that like the dude makes the juice, then it shoots up to like one of the giraffes.
Yeah.
Like, the whole parking ticket scene where she's running around giving parking tickets to cars for different types of animals that are all like huge sizes. Like, I don't know, this really, all these like visual things really like transported me into this world and made it like really real for me, even though it was animated. And I don't know, like it made it easier for me to be okay with the fact that all of these are like animals as characters and made like the story like more plausible somehow.
I think
the world is so all encompassing.
Yeah, I really liked how, like, obviously, like, the central, like, theme of the movie is kind of, like, race relations and stuff like that. Like, when she's leaving and our parents are like, you need fox repellent because all foxes are bad. And she's like, not just all foxes are bad, just some foxes, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about it yesterday. I feel like they could have very easily, like, chosen an animal and, like, this is this particular race and this animal is this particular race. But they didn't go into that, which I thought was really great for the movie. And then I don't know, I just feel like, and sometimes it was funny to see like them do like kind of like the real world equivalent of some like faux pas, like when he was like, oh, you're so cute, and she was like, actually only all bunnies can call other bunnies cute. I thought that was a really great addition. It was funny. It was great. And then when like the Nick was touching the assistant mayor's hair and she's like, you can't just do that. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah, it was really clever how they brought in like real life, I guess they're like microaggression type situations into like this animal world where you just like see it and you're like, oh my God, I can totally like see where you're going with that. And I think it was just something that I really like about animated movies is that they're able to appeal to so many different age groups. And I think that this movie did a great job. I think the writing is phenomenal because you have that kind of base level of kind of like gag humor, almost like slapstick humor that I think all ages can really approach. And then you have like the cute animals that the kids will like, but then you have like the really intense and very deeply thought out kind of discrimination and social kind of level of all of this, and it just becomes this like really deep metaphor for like how we discriminate and also how ridiculous all of that is. I mean, it's literally like you're watching like an emu discriminate against a fox and you're like, that is so silly. And then for some reason in our society we're like, no, it's rational. And I think that's one of the most powerful parts of the movie is it knows that it has like a ridiculous form that it can use to show how ridiculous human actions are.
Right. And I think what this movie did well is that sometimes movies that are like supposed to be social commentary type movies are really like way too explicit about their social commentary.
Like, to the point, over the head.
Yeah, to the point where it's like this is no longer like this movie is like a kid's movie. It's supposed to be enjoyable to watch. And like often movies that are like social commentary are not that enjoyable to watch because it's supposed to unsettle you. It's supposed to confuse you. It's supposed to like actually bring about like a mindset change of yours. But this movie, I think like it's not as the social commentary is definitely there, but it's not like overt and really repetitive as it might be in other types of movies. And they do it in really clever and interesting ways that are like, thought-provoking, but still engaging and not necessarily like off-putting.
Yeah, I think they definitely tried to have fun with it.
Right.
I feel like that's just like a thing about Disney movies in general. Like, I always feel like they're very good about appealing to the kids, but then also putting stuff in that makes you like feel like as like an older person that's not necessarily the key demographic that you can definitely enjoy it as well. I feel like that's just like a Disney movie thing, but that's just might be me.
No, I agree with you, but I think the difference with this movie is that it is implicit in what it's saying, but it's also to a degree pretty explicit about the main message that it's trying to get across. And I think with other Disney movies, what happens is you have jokes that cater to different audience levels. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think this was actually like messages that grow increasingly more complex as you get older and as you see the world in new and different ways. So I thought that kind of set this apart from kind of the other Disney movies that I agree do have that variant of humor, but I think it stops at humor with a lot of other ones.
Right. Well, and I think the what's important to me here is that the social commentary and all doesn't like necessarily detract from the actual story that they're telling, which like in and of itself, I thought was really interesting and really engaging and fun because of all it's basically like if you took everything away from it, it's basically like a detective movie. Like there's a case that they're trying to solve and the case keeps like what you initially see like keeps growing in complexity and then you get extra layers and then there's like a new villain and then you think this person is the villain, but he is actually just like an ineffective bureaucratic leader. And like, and then
of course, the
person on you like trusted is actually like not, is actually the villain. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, really, if you're really worried about spoilers.
Yeah. And, sorry. And so I really liked that part of the movie didn't get lost in the social commentary, which I think it can in some movies. But at the same time, it was also like, it was explicit enough to where like it was there and it was like a important part of the movie, but it didn't detract from the actual story. Yeah. It actually added to it and made it more complex and interesting and engaging.
Yeah. This movie was just like timely as hell too. Like at the end when she's like,
geez. Oh my God, I want to know when they had to make this.
Like we watched
animation
this on Thursday,
takes a long time.
Right. So like, yeah, like we watched it on Thursday, like the day Trump like clinched the nomination. I'm just like, Like, and she's talking about how, like, she's like, everyone has to be fear. Like, 90% of the population is prey. And so, like, if we, yeah, like, make them afraid of the 10%, we could all rally against this whole group. I was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like, it was, yeah, so timely. It's crazy, yeah, like, how, like, effective it was and how, like, on the nose it was for, like, yeah, now.
Yeah, exactly. It was just perfectly timely and really, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another aspect of this movie that I really liked that we haven't talked about is actually just like the characters themselves. Like, I found the lead character like fairly compelling. I don't know. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought that like she, I don't know. What do you guys think about the lead character and like the portrayal of her?
I liked her. I thought she was very well done. I thought she was like deep.
Yeah, I liked her, and I thought it was interesting how they kind of made her the one that started this whole thing. Like, she didn't mean, yes, to, but, like, at the press conference, yes, and she's like, oh, she, it's biology. And to her, it was like,
yeah,
yeah. Like, to her, it was like, oh, I just heard the scientist say it, so it must, yeah, be kind of true. And it's not like she's sitting there being like, these people are bad, like, always. It's just like, that's what she'd heard, and that's what she'd learned. And so she, like, unknowingly kind of, like, brought this onto her society. Kind of. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
So, if you're wondering what that sound was, a relative of Daniel's is outside moving some sort of lawn ornament.
Anyway, sorry. What I thought was interesting, and this is something I observed, and tell me whether you agree. I thought it was interesting that they made her character not like a perfect, like, she was definitely like supposed to be a role model. Yeah. She was like, she's got an amazing sense of work ethic, a really strong like sense of morals, and is like really passionate about her work, but at the same time she's not perfect and she makes mistakes and she has to like go to other people for advice, and yeah, and yet like she's still like the protagonist and still interesting. And I think it's important that in this movie, like, she's definitely portrayed as the hero, but at the same time, it's not like a perfect hero. Like, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I have something that I think is relevant. I think Disney, as probably a lot of us have seen, has gotten a lot of crap for kind of their portrayal of female characters in their movies, sure, especially in their animated, mm-hmm, movies. And so, yeah, I think that's something that probably everyone on the creative team was really thinking about when they were making this. Right. And you can see kind of that evolution through Disney princesses even. I mean, we had, yeah, Brave, and now there's this new film that's going to be coming out. Danielle, you know the name of it.
Oh, right? Moana, because Lin-Manuel, yes, Miranda is writing the music. So...
So you have this progression in kind of the way characters are portrayed, and I think Disney is really moving away from that more storybook narration style where you have kind of like a trope. So you have,
right,
the princess who is X, and instead you have, you know, this main character who is like trying her best. She's a bunny, but but yeah, I mean, essentially.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to. It was right, wow, there. No, but I mean, you know, you have these characters who are increasingly complex. They see things through their own perspective, and that is something that is built and accumulated over the course of their, you know, quote unquote life that we don't always see. But I think that's something that Disney's starting to grapple with, is the complexity of perspective and the complexity of characters that they haven't really explored too much in the far past with their movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, like, I think that, like, a really important part of this, a part of, like, their portrayal that I really appreciated was, like, that her relationship with, like, her male counterpart in the movie wasn't a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, exactly what you expect through this whole thing. You expect, like, at the end, like, there's some big scene where, like, he grabs her like from falling off a building, and then they like make out at the end. And like, even in this happens in like in kids movies, like this is like how the movie ends. Like in Frozen, she like goes off with that the moose dude, like, and like, yeah, and by the end it's like it's a romantic relationship, like that's what that is. But that's not what we get in this movie. Like, there's no there's no big romantic moment. And you can maybe say like, okay, maybe they're trying to get us to extrapolate this and like think of it as ourselves. But like, that's not really, it's pretty easy to take it. We'll take it that like this is not a romantic relationship, but at the end they're just like
friends.
They're just really good friends who've like had this awesome experience together and like have deep conversations about their past.
Exactly.
Which I thought was awesome and like really important. Especially like in our like evolving societal conversation about gender roles and whatever, and I thought it was good that like, you know, they didn't make her this like kind of character who eventually like has to have a relationship in order to be compelling, you know, and this like deep male like friendship between like a man and a woman that evolves through the course of the movie can just be a deep friendship. I thought that was great, like really
awesome. Yeah, I know, I like that too. Speaking of Moana, we were looking. Remember, we were during the movie.
No,
I'm
this
sorry,
is really important, just, Daniel. This we is found like an Easter important egg.
Yeah, we found an Easter egg in the movie. So when they're going to the weasel for help, and he's selling movies, and he's like, movies that have already come out. I even have movies that haven't come out yet. One of them was Meowana, and then another one was like something, Frozen it was like Frozen 2, but the middle one was like Jurassic. So I really want to know what that movie is. Like, I didn't, So like so it's obviously something Disney that's coming out, so I just really wanted to know like what the third one was. Because
I don't know.
Yeah, retweet. Did you notice I was curious.
Did you notice the Frozen reference in the movie? There's at one point when she's talking to the commissioner dude, and he's like, look, this isn't some like story where everyone just runs around singing and dancing. This is Zootopia. It's real. Yeah. Life is real. Yeah. You have to let it go.
I remember that.
And I was like, oh, wow. Like,
Disney does meta stuff like that so well. Like, so many of their jokes are like almost self-deprecating, but in a way where they're like, we know we're going to make so much money from that one joke. And like, I think it's great. Like, I love the humor. I love it.
In Frozen, when she decides she's going to marry Sven, is the evil guy. And her sister's like, you can't just marry a guy you just met. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
I see what you're doing, Disney. I see you.
Oh, Disney. Yeah. Man, I want to learn how to write like these people. The writing in this movie, like, I would say you could even just read the script and it would be a really good script to read.
Right. Yeah. Well, and honestly, like, for all that we've said about this movie, like, about its plot, about its characters, about, like, its commentary, like, all of this wouldn't be able to stand if the movie wasn't hysterical.
It's so funny.
The movie is so funny, and it's so funny on so many different levels. Like, there's the visual stuff, there's the kids stuff, there's, like, there's a bunch of movies that... The moments that were funniest for me were when, like, all the characters would, like, a bunch of the side characters would just, like, say things that were, like, the most fatal.
Our neighbors were gold.
Yeah. Like, the neighbors, when they were like, tomorrow's going to be another day, and then the other giraffe was like, yeah, but it might be worse. Like, I thought it was so
it's
funny.
Great.
Like, and her dad, when she's leaving her home to go to the big city, and she's like really idealistic and she's like, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And her dad's like, well, yeah, and bears. And
yeah. Her parents were like kind of horrible when she was like, I have dreams. And she was like, they're like, well, you know, maybe don't have those.
Maybe not.
Right.
But that, well, I think that like undercutting of the tropes, it just like furthers what I was saying before about Disney moving towards like an increasingly complex way of telling stories.
Right.
Like they realize like, oh, all of these tropes about everything being okay in the end, like we can't really stick with that because people are kind of going away from that a little bit. But I do think they do a great job of combining kind of idealism with that more pragmatic.
Right.
Yeah. They didn't have to go
thing because they do it through humor.
They didn't have to go. Cause I feel like most like movies now, cause like, I feel like now, a days people are more cynical about that kind of stuff. So like when they see like, oh, it's just a happy ending, they're like, yeah, whatever. So people tend to go like real dark to be go like the opposite. And like Disney, like this movie kind of balanced the whole like, it's maybe not going to work out okay, but it's not like doom and gloom. Like, oh my gosh, everything's going to be bad.
Right. Well, I mean, and the movie ends super happily. Like the right people are in jail. Like everyone else is fine. They fixed the problem. Like, the main character's
the problem.
The main character
synopsis.
Yeah, well, the main characters were, like, able to pull one over on the bad guy, and, like, everything worked out perfectly, and Shakira sings at the end. I mean, like, you can't really imagine a more idealistic ending, but at the same time, it was one that felt, like, super well-earned because of, like, the starting place of the movie and how, like, there was actually, like, a real, like, an actual build-up to this whole thing. And I don't know, like, when I was getting to the point where, like, I was getting towards the end of the movie, I was actually, like, okay, like, this might end badly. Like, I kind of knew it wasn't going to end in, like, a super dark place. But that wasn't, like,
movie.
It wasn't out of the realm of, like, plausibility for this movie to end, like, kind of sad.
Yeah.
Which is great, which is, like, which means that you're doing, like, really complex and interesting storytelling. Yeah. Oof. Such a good movie.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted
again right now.
The one thing I thought was, like, a little weird for the storytelling was, okay, so the, once again, central premise, like, race relations.
Right,
stuff
sure.
like that. But they did fall into a couple of stereotypes.
All right, let's
which
talk
I thought
about.
Was
let's
odd
do it.
For the message of the movie. Because, like, I don't know, like, stereotype, I'm kind of big on, like, stereotypes in media kind of, like, reinforce a lot of things, and, like, they don't necessarily help. You know, mm-hmm. so, like, the stereotype of the Italian mob boss. And even remember we were watching the part in with the Jaguar, and he's, like, in a wife beater. And he's, like, a Latin, supposed to be, like, Latin American. So he's, like, in a wife beater. So, like, on one hand, they do have this, like, great message, but also they did a little bit fall into the trap of stereotyping, did you think?
I think it would be really hard not to do that, though. You know, like, in making a film that has that message, I think it would be nearly impossible to do that, because if you think about, like, a lot of Disney movies, like, every Disney villain is British. Like, that is just a trope in Disney films. Like, they all have British accents. And, you know, like, you can make that critique for the other Disney movies as well. Like, they're just really slimy British guys, like, every single villain. So I see what you're saying. I think it would be really hard to avoid that. I'm not saying that, like, warrants it or anything, but it would be interesting to think about, like, how the filmmakers could have gotten around some of those stereotypes that I think viewers would recognize and be like, oh, I've seen The Godfather. I recognize the quote unquote, you know, Italian mob boss. That makes sense to me. And that's a funny character because it's like a very small animal playing what is usually a very muscular and very intimidating character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that makes sense. I don't know. I just felt like, I don't know. I felt it was odd a little bit. Like, I don't think it detracted very much, but I thought it was odd that they kind of put those.
Yeah, and it wasn't. I guess I don't know if it was.
And it wasn't like
it was certainly like avoidable. Could have told the story slightly differently. I think it would have been much harder. And honestly, like, I don't know. It undermines the message a little bit. But I do think that like the trope. I think using those as like part of the narrative was helpful. And honestly, like the Latin, the Jaguar in the wife beater thing wasn't even something that I actually picked up on. I just like thought he was in a wife beater cause he was like in his house by himself, you know?
This is true.
That was like the first thing I noticed about that character. I would go to Jack. Is he wearing a wife beater?
Oh, also
he's hanging out. Like
another thing, this isn't about like stereotypes or anything that they like kind of like slid in there for like the adults was when they were in the subway train car that where they were like making the drugs, like the flowers or whatever. And the sheep's on the phone. And he was like, oh, Walter and Jesse are outside coming in. And those are the two main characters.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Yeah, that was solid.
That was really
I was real. Well done. Well done.
Can we talk about the issue with the reproductive cycle in this film that I found that we talked about a little bit yesterday?
Danielle? Yeah, we were like talking about plot holes.
All right.
Yeah, so one of the like plot holes in this that I'm curious to hear your guys' opinions on is like we see the bunny family, we see the fox family, we see like but they're all confined to their species. So doesn't the like species thing and the fact that they kind of need to reproduce within species almost get in the way of the message a little bit, or how do you think it works alongside the message to kind of enhance it and make it more robust? Because I don't think they would have like done that without some sort of intention. So I think it is intentional, or maybe it's something that you just take from the start and you just swallow it and you're like, okay, we're going.
Right.
I think
well,
it
I mean,
might
like
be something. Go. Oh, I think it might be something you may have to swallow a little bit, because then you get into, like, what would their child be? And then, like, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like
a beaver giraffe.
Exactly. So, like, yeah. I think it's, like, out of the realm of possibility for, like, two different animals to be together. But I don't think it's something they wanted you to think, like, super hard about. But I think it's definitely, like, interesting to think about. Also, like, what do they eat? What do the predators eat?
I think they're all, like, vegetarians.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about all the foods, they have all the vegetables, they have fruits, they have junk food, and they have, like, those are really the three food categories you need, honestly.
The three food groups, obviously.
Yeah, and I think that's, I guess, like, they it was, like Danielle said, I guess that's just something you have to deal with, because it's sort of out of the scope of this movie. Maybe Zootopia 2 will be about interspecial relationships, and they'll do the thing where they make the fox and the bunny, like, fall in love with each other, and then they'll have to, like, talk to their parents about
court.
Yeah. Go to court. Yeah.
Oh my god, maybe there might
that'd
be like,
that'd be amazing if there was a court case.
Two sisters can't marry each other.
Where I would be okay with Zootopia 2 happening, because I really feel like this is just a perfect movie, and, like, it would be retroactively tarnished by a sequel.
I don't know. I mean, like, the thing is, I kind of tend to trust Disney on sequels sometimes. Like, I think Toy Story 3 was, like, one of the best movies. One of the best Pixar movies. Like, I don't know. Cars 2 was pretty crap, but
Cars 1 wasn't good.
But, like, how many times can you get a Toy Story 3, you know? Like, Zootopia was just so good. I don't want
anyone
to, like,
could do it
mess up
Disney.
A little bit.
I'm a very big believer in Disney.
I guess we'll hold our breath until we get Finding Dory, and
we'll see how that goes.
We'll see if that's worth its weight. And then we can make our judgment. But I don't know. I guess I wouldn't mind Zootopia 2 just because, like, I really enjoyed all the characters and I really liked the world.
Oh my god, guys, there's a rat in my room.
Wait. Wait, can you move your computer? Let's see him.
Oh my.
Yeah, turn to the
show us.
Are you on the floor?
No, I'm on my bed.
Show us. Is he still there?
He's under my refrigerator. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Show the rat. Show us the rat.
I want to see it, but also that's horrifying.
What the fuck do I do? Pardon my French.
Never just sit on your bed forever.
Oh, my God. Call someone.
You should name Mr. Big.
So, overrated or underrated?
No, I was making a point. I was making a point about the movie.
Make your point. Danielle, you can put this in the bloopers at the very end.
No, so I was thinking, I wouldn't mind a sequel to this movie, to be quite honest. Just because, honestly, like, like you, Erica, I love this movie. I thought it was, like, perfect, and I really liked the plot, really liked the story. But I would not mind getting to spend more time with these characters, more time in this world, more time, like, because I think that there is more in this universe that's, like, could be talked about. And maybe it's not, like, maybe the movie, maybe, like, Zootopia 2 isn't about Hops and Nick. Maybe it's about, like, the buffalo chief and his backstory. And maybe it's about, like, other, like, aspects within this world. Maybe the story is how Mr. Big became a mafia boss. Maybe, like, but I honestly think that, like, spending more time in the, I would not mind spending
the
more time in
the world.
It's
just so fun. It doesn't have to be.
It's so fun. It's so interesting. And so, I don't know. I wouldn't mind it, but yeah.
We didn't bring up the sloths. The sloths were great at the DMV.
The sloths are great.
Check out that sloth scene. To be fair, it's the whole trailer, so
yeah,
it's like that, but it's contextualized and it's funnier.
Yeah. But yeah,
he's like speeding. Great.
Yeah. No, I definitely thought that wasn't going to be like a good scene, and they walked. Just the way it was done was so perfect, because you like watch the sloths doing like their thing really poorly and really slowly. But then you also got to see, like, the other animals just suddenly responding to the sloth.
They're like, oh,
so
my God.
Bad. Like, the armadillo was just sitting there, like, tapping her finger. And, like, that's something that I went to, like, the DMV office today. And I was, like, watching someone, like, do my registration. I was just sitting there, like, And then I watched the scene and was like, that's exactly what happened. That was like really well done, really perfect.
Solid.
More than I ever could have hoped.
Okay, so to wrap up, overrated, 152 is the number, by the way.
Oof. I think, appalling.
Okay, so, context, I think it's a fairly new movie, so, you know.
Which is probably why it's in the 250, honestly.
Exactly. And also, I just think, it's new, so it's like in the 250, which is pretty impressive. And so, like, I think just like the rating system, I think it definitely like will climb at some point. And also, once again, Shawshank is one. So, grain of salt.
Okay. Yeah. What's it around?
Someone else look that up because I'm not trying to.
Yeah, I'll do it. So Zootopia on the top 250 is 152. V for Vendetta is 151. And Gran Torino is 153.
I don't even think you need to know context or anything. I would bump it way up.
Yeah. It's above Finding Nemo. It's above...
I think that's interesting to compare it to, like, other Disney-like movies. I don't know. Nemo just has, like, a special place because it's, like... I actually hated that movie when I was younger. But, like, now I, like, appreciate it.
It's above Monsters, Inc. It's above.
I don't know.
It's above a lot of. I mean, it's above of 100.
I think it deserves to be because how deftly they handled the themes.
Yeah,
and
that's
hard. Easier to make like a kids movie that's like pretty enjoyable and like you came out like, oh, that was cute, but like it actually kind of made you think, which was good. I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely am of the opinion that this movie is underrated, especially since. When it came out, I didn't hear, like, a humongous amount of hype.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, I read a couple articles about how, like, surprisingly it was about, like, race and stuff like that. But,
Right, yeah. And so I definitely think this is underrated and is a definite watch for everyone out there in the void who, like, listening to our opinions for some reason.
It's my mom. Hi, Mom.
Everyone say hello to your family members, because...
It's Erica's mother, and then us, the rest of us, at a later point in time. So, hello, future Daniel, Danielle, and Erica.
Actually, though.
All right. Erica, you think it's underrated, too?
Yes, of course, completely. I think it should be,
we were watching it, and she was like, this is so good.
I wouldn't shut up about it. I was so annoying, but I stick by my opinion.
Yeah, I was watching it with my friends. My friends were over, and I was like, oh, wait, I have to watch Zootopia, and I made them watch it. And they were, like, so annoyed with me at the beginning, and by the end, they were like, I'm so glad you made me watch that. And I was like, yeah, no.
Wait, were you all together where, like, Erica was with you and your friends?
Well, I watched it at home, and then I came into D.C., and then me and Erica were supposed to record, and then just ended up watching The Lobster, which is also another good movie.
The movie that we talked about last time with Chris?
Yeah, yes. We watched it. It was good. It was really
okay.
Good. So watch that.
All right.
It's a little messed up, but...
Okay. Right. So the definite opinion is that this is underrated and that if you don't watch this, you're probably a horrible person.
You're probably missing out on a really important part in cinematic history.
No. Exactly. You're probably a horrible person.
And that.
That's the conclusion.
But also ignorant.
All right. I think we're out.
Yep.
All right.
Up the 250.
Oh, yes. Follow at HalftimeGU on Twitter. Go on georgetownvoice.com/halftime or just go on georgetownvoice.com and find us in the bar thing to listen to more podcasts, read more articles, and just, like, generally have a really great time.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to send out a real quick SOS if anyone on the internet knows what I should do about this mouse that I've just encountered. Please, God help me.
This mouse has a name, and the name is Mr. Big.
Anyone can cook.
Sure. Anyway. I really hope it's not big, though, to be honest.
All right. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.